At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein stands ready to take your finance and investment questions and share his unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Thursday, August 1st, 2024 edition of InvestTalk. Yes, you heard that right. We are in the month of August now and into the warmest days of the summer and closer to my favorite month, which is September. Even though the market's more volatile during that time, I live in Laguna Beach and it's a common place where tourists go and there's less tourists. And so weather's still warm, beach is a little more empty, and I love that. But also it's my birthday month. So we're inching closer to that. But maybe you have a favorite month. Reach out, let me know. But this hour is not just about, you know, your favorite month or my favorite month. It's really about taking that next step each and every month. And that starts with taking that next step today. Okay. And that is in your education journey, in your investment journey, because both of those are intertwined. You are never going to learn it all. You always have to learn something new if you're going to do this yourself. You have to focus on trends in the markets, both short, medium, and long term. Trends in industries, once again, both short, medium, and long term. And how that plays with your particular strategy and your risk tolerance level. And that can be a challenge for those that don't have the discipline, the time, and the data. And we're here to at least help you with the discipline. I can't make more time for you. I can't buy you good data. I can only buy it myself and, you know, our clients good data. But I can help you learn some lessons. And that's what the show is about. Finding ways to avoid pitfalls as well as capitalize on opportunities. So that's what this hour is for. To further your education. And I'm going to talk about today's market performance and run down some show topics. But first, let's tackle this caller question.
Hi, Duncan from New York calling about stock ticker SOLV. It is a healthcare stock. Someone mentioned it before on the podcast, and I was interested in buying it, and I did buy it. And then I kind of forgot, like an idiot, the importance of this. But it is part of the healthcare sector. I am trying to expand. Now with the interest rates changing and everything like that, is the healthcare sector something I should be focusing on? And if so, should I also be adding more to this stock? Solventum, S-O-L-V. Thank you very much and have a good day. Bye.
All right. Looking at Solventum. And if I remember correctly, this is definitely a spinoff. And I'm trying to remember what company was a spinoff from. It spun off back in April. Let me look at, oh, there we go. Edwards, right? No, that's the, I'm sorry. I have to look and find out where this is, but let's look at the numbers. They develop, manufacture healthcare solutions to leverages materials, data science, and clinical research. So they are in the medical device space, medical research space, and their profitability is strong. Earned $8.20 last year, but only supposed to earn $6.24 this year and only $5.50 next year. That's what worries me here. Is why is this trending lower in earnings and what is the true earnings number, okay, that it can start growing off of? That's what worries me. Also, they do have a good amount of debt, about $7.5 billion of net debt on the balance sheet on a $10 billion market cap. That's kind of a lot more than I would be that comfortable with. Now, if you look based on current numbers, it looks good. Free cash flow is about $1.5 billion on a $10 billion market cap. That's, once again, pretty good. But if earnings continue to fall, that is going to fall as well. So, you know, where is the bottom here is my worry. Oh, there we go. It's 3M. This is a spinoff from 3M. Where is the bottom here? And I can't tell you that yet. And there's another thing about spinoffs. Say you're a 3M holder. You like 3M. You like the diversity, industrial aspect to it. Typically why you're buying it. And then you get this random spinoff in the healthcare space. It's not really industrial, right? Doesn't really fit with my portfolio. I don't know much about it. I don't really want to do the research on it. I'm just going to sell it. That's typically what happens for the first 6 to 12 months of these spinoffs. Now, typically that is a good buying opportunity if, you know, because they're throwing the baby out without even investigating it. And so I think there's a potential opportunity here. I just would rather see an earnings picture that steadies. And until then, I'm going to pass on Solventum, but one to continue to watch. Okay. Thanks for the call. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes, and our main focus point is about 10 tips for securing the best HELOC rate. So housing prices are high, and a lot of people have equity. And a good way to tap that equity without moving, without refinancing, is to get a home equity line of credit. And it's essential for home owners that are looking to leverage their equity. Now, some people do it to invest in equities. Invest in stocks. I don't love that. I don't love that idea. But there are some key factors to maintain a good credit score, reduce your debt-to-income ratio, etc. We're going to go over these to make sure that you make an informed decision to obtain the best HELOC for your needs, okay? We also have some other topics on the docket as well. One is in regards to Tesla's recent profit report and how much was driven by subsidies. So we'll look at that story. And then also, we had one other one. I can't remember what it was, but I'm sure I'll have more as we go through this hour. But most importantly, this show is about you. And so we will be answering your finance and investment questions. One is about ETF management. The other is about Fortinet. And we will answer some questions that came in via the comment section over on our YouTube channel as well. And of course, we welcome your finance and investment questions now at 888-99-CHART. But we're going into a short break. And on the other side, I'll talk about today's market activity and take your questions on the Invest Talk Anytime listener line. Once again, at 888-99-CHART.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com.
My question today is about HME Equipment Services, Inc.
And for our podcast subscribers.
If you're willing to take the risk.
InvestTalk.
If you're okay with that risk.
With host and financial advisor Justin Klein.
And that volatility. Go for it.
And co-host and portfolio manager Luke Guerrero.
This company has fallen like a rock. It's down 52%.
Invest Talk.
Ticker symbol THT.
Everybody wants a secure financial future.
Richard, you have a question about TOL?
But getting there takes strategy, discipline, and the right information.
Wonder what you think of the price of it.
Let's go to Chris in Maine looking at IEX.
Hey, Justin. I own it. Just seeing what you thought of it.
InvestTalk is made better by listener contributions. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART. Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
8899 chart, 8892-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. Let's take a look at the market today. It was a decidedly negative day in markets. A big bounce back yesterday, and I didn't really buy it, mainly because of the yen. The yen was strong after the 25 basis point hike from the Bank of Japan, which was higher than the market had expected. The yen took off, and I was a bit shocked that equities didn't turn the other way. And so this is a good lesson where when you get into kind of a risk-off environment, there can be one-day bounces, and those bounces can be very powerful, and you saw that yesterday, but it's really about, can it follow through? And the simple answer today was no, it didn't. It basically gave up all of yesterday's gains, at least on the S&P, on the NASDAQ nearly as well. And small caps, those definitely were the ones that took it on the chin most of all, though, you know, still much better technical setup than broader S&P or the NASDAQ. And a lot of it has to do with unemployment claims ticked up to nearly 250,000 jobs. Construction spending was down. So you definitely saw a jobs picture that is accelerating negatively. And you're actually getting a small chance that the Fed will cut by 50 basis points in September. Actually, when I say small, it's not really that small anymore. It's 22%. And it's a guarantee we're going to get one, maybe two, I don't say two cuts, but a bigger cut in September. And the odds now of where the Fed will be at by December is actually three cuts or more. And so the market is certainly pricing in a very dovish outcome. And, you know, the small caps, I think, just got caught up. Once again, you have one day of selling, and we'll see if we get follow through on the small caps, because certainly they underperform the large caps like they have not. You know, the small caps have been the main outperformer over the past month. And actually, I'll bring this up because I think this is really, really interesting. Even after today, small caps down, you know, over 2%, doing worse than the large caps, even though the whole market was down a good amount. Large cap growth is down 6.5% over the past month. Mid cap growth is down slightly, down 15 basis points. But in this, all on the value side, large cap value down up 5.21%. Mid caps up 6.27%. Small cap value up 8.51% over that last month, even after today's rough day. And so I think this is a continuation of the unwind of the yen carry trade, overpositioning in big tech. After hours, you did get Apple's earnings, which were a bit better than expected. The market's reaction is it's up slightly, but nothing too dramatic. But that's kind of the market right now. I said this, if you were a client or if you saw our quarterly report, you'll see, you know, our quarterly report comes out near the beginning of each quarter, and I send that to all of our people in our database. If anybody wants that, shoot me an email. I can send it out to you. But it's really, really sad. This is a quarter of choppiness. This is a quarter where you're likely to get more volatility. Not only because of positioning, but seasonality. August and September are also tend to be a bit more volatile. And as you go into an election season, there's more uncertainty. And so it's not a shock here to see this this unwind of overpositioning in big tech. And I think that will continue for the near future. Now let's pivot over to a question submitted via the comment section on our YouTube channel. And Ulam Spiral says, any thoughts on OKLO as speculative bet on nuclear energy? Assume you'll keep it as a small position in my portfolio, about 1%. Okay, looking at OKLO in the nuclear energy space. And nuclear was down pretty nicely today. This is designs and develops advanced fission power plants to provide clean, reliable, and affordable energy. Okay, here's the issue. This is not nuclear. This is fission. Okay? And I'm sorry. It is fission. It is nuclear. I was reading the wrong word. I don't think that I would bet on this. Mainly because losing money. continues to lose money. And until there's a strong push towards small modular reactors, I'm not going to bet on that. I think there's going to be more adoption, but I rather own the nuclear power, the uranium producers over something like this that's speculative. I'm passing on this. Interesting name, but I'm going to pass. Right. We're heading into a break. My phone lines are open. Coming up, my primary focus point here on Invest Talk.
You've got finance and investment questions, and Justin Klein is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my main focus point today is about the top 10 tips for securing the best HELOC rates. And with housing prices continuing to make record highs, and despite the calls from fear mongers out there on YouTube and social media, housing prices remain elevated. And I don't think we're going to get a major crash, mainly because inventory remains relatively low. And so a lot of you out there who own homes probably have a lot of equity in your home. And so a HELOC is a good source of capital when you need it. Okay. Now, you don't want to get, a lot of people get addicted to it. They use that as their kind of piggy bank, and they flaunt the standard rules of good money management, good budgeting. And they, once again, fall back on that equity too much. And I've seen people lose their homes because their HELOCs balloon too much, and they add on that on top of their mortgage, and now they can no longer afford their home. So the number one tip, and that's not even one of these 10 tips, is to be careful with the HELOC. Don't just go after it because you can, okay? Now, the number one thing, obviously, with any credit is to maintain good credit. So you want a credit score of 700 or above to get the best rate. So that's number one. And that's having a good holistic financial picture. Not just on the investment side, but good money habits, good spending habits, spending less than you make, having consistent savings habits, etc. Okay. Number two, have enough equity. That's pretty simple. Typically, the lenders are looking for what is called this combined loan-to-value ratio. So what you're current mortgage balances, and then adding on whatever HELOC you're approved for, and dividing that by the value of the home. And they want it below 85% typically. Okay, so that's a good way to think about it, right? If you have an existing mortgage and you want to say, how much can I take on a HELOC potentially? That 85 number is a good rule of thumb. Now, every lender's different, so don't hold my feet to the fire there, but that's kind of the norm. And then number three is consider a different type of lenders. A lot of online lenders that offer HELOCs, you don't just have to go to your bank, but sometimes the bank is the best choice. And compare all the factors, not just the rate, okay? And that goes to number four, which is understand introductory rates. Oftentimes, you will get that. You will see for 6, 12 months, 18 months, 2 years, there's an introductory rate. That sounds really enticing. Oh, that's really low. But the devil's in the details. Most people, when they take out a HELOC, they're not paying that down inside that introductory rate. But that's why these banks are doing it, right? They want to entice you in for that low rate and then jack up the rates once the introductory period is over, okay? And so oftentimes that rate will skyrocket and then things get hairy. So don't just fall for an introductory rate. And then on the flip side, look for rate caps. There are HELOCs that offer safeguards against rates rising. Remember, most HELOCs are floating rate. And they're typically interest only for a period of time. And then they turn into actual amortized loans, which means your payment will go up. Okay. And then if rates go up, like you've seen as of late, those caps can be very important. And I think in this time with inflation the way it is, a rate cap is vital. Okay. Six is factor in fees. Once again, the rate is not the only factor. A lot of them require a minimum amount of balance to hold. They charge inactivity fees, for example. So you can't just like take a HELOC and have it there as your rainy day fund if there is inactivity fees, for example. Okay. So a lot of that will negate a low HELOC rate when you have other fees kind of adding up. And then watch for balloon payments, meaning you having to pay off the entire lump sum at the end of a particular term. And that can, once again, throw a wrench. What if you have this balloon payment? Now you're forced to maybe refinance your entire home in a time when maybe you have a 3 or 3.5% mortgage rate. You take out a HELOC, you get a balloon payment, you can't afford it. What's the only thing you can do? You refinance the both loans and get a whole new loan, and now it has to be at a higher rate. So make sure that any balloon payment in the future is payable. Okay. Number eight is choose shorter draw and repayment periods. So a lot of these drag out, and that just allows you to accrue more interest. And so you want to use these, if you want to use a HELOC, you want to use this as a short-term plan. Okay, I'm taking this money out for an emergency. Maybe it's a medical emergency. Maybe it's maybe you really need to redo a kitchen and bathrooms. They're just outdated and they don't function for you and your family, and you want to get that done. But you have a plan. I want to pay that off in 2-3 years. Done. Okay, that can be I think a worthwhile way of using a HELOC. But you don't want these to drag out and turn into a 10-15 year loan. Look for fixed rate options. Not all HELOCs adjust, but some of them you can get protection with longer rate locks. So look at that. And then lastly, take advantage of discounts that maybe you get at your current bank. You typically get bundled pricing when you have a deeper relationship with a bank, and those discounts can be pretty hefty. 0.5%, sometimes even a full percentage point off the rate, which can be more competitive than those online lenders, for example. So make sure, look at your bank first, but certainly shop around. You're heading into a break. I welcome your finance and investment questions right now. No question is too simple or too complex. You set the agenda. So give us a call now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch InvestTalk on our YouTube channel.
Good morning. This is Randy, the Iowa trucker. First thing off, somewhat belated, but I couldn't bring myself to it, is deepest sympathies for Steve's family and all of you there at InvestTalk. I always thought he sounded like such a decent human being. I have a couple of questions. One very simple. What level of assets under management do you want before someone can hire you to manage their investments? I don't have a lot yet, but my goal is to get to where I can, because I clearly know what you're doing. My second question is a little more involved. As a truck driver, by the time my day is over, the brain just doesn't work at trying to look up fundamentals and charts and so on. I try, and I gain some, but not gaining fast enough. So I'm thinking of switching to ETFs. What type of ETFs, what sectors do you feel have the best potential at this time? I hope that's all clear. Thank you very much. And you have a great program. Don't ever stop doing it.
Thank you. Appreciate the feedback and your trust that we built trust with you. And hopefully you do become a client one day. Our minimum is $150,000. Some of our strategies are minimum are $250,000. So typically it depends on the client and what the goals are. So that's for all of you out there. And, you know, if you're looking for ETFs though right now, and we say it's not a bad way to go if you don't have enough money to work with an advisor like us, but is to invest in ETFs, and you could go just plain vanilla, right? SPY. You probably know if you listen to it for a while, we don't love the asset mix or sector mix in the SPY right now, mainly because it's so tech heavy. And that's why, small caps are up as of late, as I said at the top of the show, over the past month, and large caps are down. And So how do you avoid that? Well, you could buy a value-based ETF. There are a lot of value-focused ETFs out there. But a better way is to, you know, gain exposure to particular sectors. And so we like industrials. We like materials. We definitely we like energy right now after this recent pullback. And the financials are pretty solid. We don't love the smaller banks, but you know it depends on the ETF. You know what kind of exposure to financials they have. So there's different parts of the market that are strong, but you have to kind of monitor it. I think that's the issue with getting sector specific is, while that is the trend now, are they going to be as attractive 6 months, 12 months, 18 months from now? And probably not. Some of them might not be. So for you, I probably wouldn't go a sector ETF. I would just go looking for a value-based ETF that has that value factor tilt to it. Okay. Thanks for the call. Now let's play two in a row from 888-99 chart.
Hello, I had a question on FTNT. That's Frank, Tom, Nancy, Tom. This is a stock that I read about regarding cybersecurity in a Morningstar article. I looked up the account itself. It looks like it's ranked as a buy for Argus. It's ranked 5 stars in Morningstar. And then even when I look at Guru Focus, I see that the GF score is about a 96, and they believe it's significantly undervalued. I know they've got earnings coming up on August 6th, so it could go either way, but I was thinking maybe I put in a little bit, maybe less than 1% in my portfolio, and you know, depending on the results, I may either add a little bit more or just hold. Let me know what you think. Thank you.
All right, looking at Fortinet, and this is a fairly large cybersecurity company, $44 billion market cap. And this is a name that we have been watching for a while. The issue really has been its multiples that it's trading at, just pretty expensive overall. And if you look at things like price to sales, about 8.3. If you've listened for any length of time, you know anything over 10 is pretty egregious, and you're pretty close to that. So it's still pretty expensive. Enterprise value to EBITDA, that's about 27. That's high, but that is near the lowest it's ever traded. But you know, since they went IPO in 2019, they've always been relatively expensive. But it is getting closer, I'll say that. My issue with it is the technicals. That when a stock's in a downtrend, which this has been since, let me zoom out to a weekly chart here. Yeah, it peaked back in basically a year ago, around $80 per share. Now it's at 57. Its relative strength is pretty poor. 17 for a cybersecurity company when tech is doing well. When a name like, what was the cybersecurity company that had the issue a couple weeks ago? I forget off the top of my head. But obviously, Fortinet is probably going to pick up some of their market share. So I would keep it on my watch list, but I wouldn't buy it quite yet, just because the technicals are just that poor. And the fundamentals are slowing. Growth last quarter was only 7% of revenue. A year ago, it was 33%. Earnings were up 26% last quarter, which is nice, but a year ago it was up 80%. So what happens when you see growth slow? Multiples contract. And I think that's what you are continuing to see here with Fortinet. And until the multiples get, I would like to buy this in the low 20s in P ratio. And right now, forward-looking earnings, it's called $2, $1.94 for next year. You know, that would put it at low to mid 40s. That's where I'd pick it up. If it gets into the mid 40s, that's right by Fortinet. Thanks for the call. Now let's take a live call now from Sammy in San Francisco. Wants to talk about Amazon.
Hey, Justin. Thanks for taking my call. Since Amazon reported earnings this afternoon, the stock has taken a tumble, as you can see. Mm-hmm. I was hoping to move some money into Amazon. Do you think this is a good buying opportunity, or I should wait a little longer?
I would wait a little longer. The entire, as I said at the top of the show, the entire large cap growth space is really taking you down the chin. And this is down to the 170 mark. And frankly, this is only the first support level. It is a support level, but this could easily break. You know, it says had a big move since the beginning of the year from, beginning of last year, from the low 80s all the way to $200 per share. Now we're back down to 170. That is the first support level. But the first major support level is going to be down at 155. And ultimately, the amazing support level would be at 127. And there's another one at 141. But I would wait at a bare minimum till 155. That's where I would potentially pick up Amazon.
Thanks for the call. Thank you.
Now, let's take another live call. Jordan, right next to me in Dana Point, looking at Qualcomm. You own it or looking to buy it?
Yeah, I own it. It's been dipping pretty hard the last few days. I took some profit, but I'm wondering if I should just sell the entire stock completely, or do you still like it?
We still like Qualcomm. Yes, this is it's having a nice pullback, but it was very overbought. It hit at $230 per share and reversed from there, and now it's down to 164. But frankly, this is the 200-day moving average. That's it. And you just have to be aware that these semiconductor names, despite being a big one, are volatile. And you go through boom and bust cycles. But ultimately, Qualcomm is a behemoth within the handset business. I think there's a lot of opportunity for them to get into like the PC business with their Snapdragon processors, for example. So it is that support. The major support is down around 152. I think that's we've owned this for a while, so we're still up pretty big on it. But in this area between 165 and 150, this is a buy zone for us. So I wouldn't be selling it. I would be re-looking at the business and see if anything that has changed that you bought it for, right? You probably bought it for a particular reason. Has anything changed with the business? Probably not. In our view, it hasn't. And so to me, this is just normal volatility and you have to be comfortable with it. Otherwise, don't play in the semiconductor game. So I would not be selling it here.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. And now let's pivot over to a question submitted via our YouTube channel. And Nick Ramsey is a long one. He says, I have a question about DDOG, Datadog. This is one of those popular tech names, small cap tech names. Let me pull this up here. I have multiple systems. Sorry, not small cap, $37 billion. It used to be small cap. Now it's much bigger. So it's earning $1.91 next year. And trading at 70 times earnings, yeesh. Even though, yes, there is growth there. But let's take a look at his full question. He says, as some context, I'm an employer of the company. I have accumulated shares via RSUs and ESPP with a look-back provision plus 15% discount. This is results in about 6% of my net worth being in Datadog. My question for you is following. In general, what are your thoughts on Datadog as a long-term investment? And is 6% of my total net worth too large a position given that it's my employer? The simple answer, 6%, no, that's not too much. We typically like to limit it to 10% of total net worth. So 6% is fine. But as you said, you have RSUs, ESPPs, you could potentially buy it at a discount. If I see a lot of people that this could easily balloon more than 10% by being granted stock and buying more and seeing that 15% discount as a slam dunk. And in a lot of companies, it is a slam dunk, but that's typically in companies that are more seasoned and aren't as egregiously overvalued as Datadog is, frankly. It's obviously a good business, once again, profitable, but as you've seen as of late, it's fallen a good amount. It peaked at around 135, now we're at 113 in just in less than a month. So it's a very volatile name. You have a price to sales ratio at 18 times, enterprise value to you at 204. They are issuing a bunch of shares to you, the employee, which is diluting the shareholders, which is kind of odd, right? You're getting shares given to you, but it's diluting earnings power. And so you probably don't want to hear this, but they probably want to stop giving away so much equity to the employees. Because that's over the long term, that's going to be not a great a path forward. Free cash flow is good, $670 billion, but it's a $37 billion market cap. It's about a 2% free cash flow yield. It's just way too expensive. So I'll take the RSUs, but I wouldn't be buying it at that 15% discount until it gets much cheaper. Now let's keep things going and play another question from the InvestTalk Voice Bank.
Hi, I have a question about two stocks. One is Meta, another is Boeing. So can you tell me whether these are good stocks to invest in just now, or are they risky? Take care. Bye-bye.
Well, first off, I'll say every stock is risky. Every single one. There is not a safe equity out there. So make sure I want every listener to internalize that, because a lot of people think, oh, this stock's safe, or this stock's risky. Everything is risky. It's just shades of risk. Remember, equities, common shareholders, you're at the bottom of the capital structure. So if things go south, you take it on the chin first. And so every stock is risky. It's just a matter of good risk or bad risk, appropriate risk or not appropriate risk. Okay. Good companies are bad companies, but good companies can turn bad, and bad companies can turn good. So let me preface there. Now, when it comes to Boeing, this is the easiest one. Why? Management is terrible. Management, it needs to be a cleaning house of management, hands down, bar none. They talk about all these things they're doing to improve safety and reverse. No, they've built a culture of profits over safety. And ultimately, in this business, that is untenable, as you've seen. And there, you know, you now have Airbus that continues to gain market share. And the only thing that's going to save Boeing is to get rid of all the people that built up that culture of bad management, of profits over safety. And until that happens, it's not investable. It's just simply not. I still think there's enough assets, enough brand there to salvage, but you need new management. Simple as that. Now, Meta, on the other hand, you know, it's rallied a lot. It had pretty good earnings. You know, they talked about AI, but you know, it really didn't pop nearly as much as I expected on the day. And the technicals are deteriorating. So, and if you're going into a tougher economic environment, certainly advertising will decline. And so I'm not a huge fan of Meta in the near term. Now, what I will say is I do think they can have a leg up in the AI race over the long term. Why? Simple. Data. I think data is going to become more and more important in AI algorithms and having access to that data. It's not going to be simple as you can just scrape the internet for data and use that data. A lot of data sets have been taken offline and siloed. And so when you're Meta and you have access to all the Facebook data and the WhatsApp data and the Instagram data, et cetera, all their businesses, that's a lot of data for them to pull from. And so them, along with, I think, Microsoft on the business side, have a lot of access to the data that we used in AI. So I think I would rather own Meta, but I probably still wouldn't buy it here just because I don't love the trends within large cap tech and the stock in general. So still on the watch list for me. Now, this Invest Talk, I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday, and that's help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Justin Klein is here and ready to tackle your questions.
Curious if you think it'd be better for me to let it go and spend money elsewhere.
Well, first off, never take one man's opinion as gospel, including my own.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
When you give a recommendation on your show for a buy-in, like an entry point to buy a stock, if I already own it, should I go ahead and be looking to sell it?
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. This is Invest Talk now with 59 million downloads. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch Invest Talk on our YouTube channel.
Good afternoon, Justin or Luke. I'm calling today about Tapestry, ticker symbol TPR.
I think it's a good quality name in the consumer cyclical sector that I think can see some good price appreciation in the coming years. So I'd like to know if the current valuation will be a great place to add more. I currently own about 1.8% in my current portfolio with an average price in the high 30s. So thank you, and I'll be listening on the podcast.
All right, looking at Tapestry, and this is a conglomerate of luxury brands or semi-luxury brands. You're talking about Coach, Kate Spade, Stuart Weitzman, and I'm just looking at any other ones. Yeah, Capri would be their major rival. They own Michael Kors, Versace, and Jimmy Choo, for example. So it's a luxury goods maker, mainly luxury leather products. And it's historically very profitable. Return on equity right now is 35%. Its five-year average is around 20%. Its five-year median is around 29%. And profitability is returning. What I like about it is that it went through a rough patch in 2015 through basically COVID. Their return on equity was in a strong downtrend. Now it's been on an uptrend from the high 20s back in 2021 now to 35%. So it's trending back towards what it was in the early aughts when it was in the 40% range. So I like the trend towards profitability and what you're looking at. I like that they're buying back shares as well. $1.3 billion in trailing free cash flow, and they continue to buy back shares. Since 2006, they've shrunk their shares from 385 million to 229 million. So they continue to do that. I like that. They have very little debt in their balance sheet. Enterprise value EBITDA is only 7, so a low multiple there. But as you said, it's a cyclical business. And right now, the expectations for earnings next year and the year after continue to come down. And that's what worries me. And the technicals are neutral to poor. And so I don't see support until 35. It's at 39 now. So I think there's still probably another 10 to 15% down from here. And I have it on my watch list, but you know, I just don't love the economic backdrop, which continues to slow. You see the unemployment rate rising. So I'm passing on it for now, but keeping it on the watch list. Thanks for the call. Now let's close with Tesla. Tesla had their profit or their earnings forecast recently, and profits fell 45%. But they benefited dramatically from a record amount of regulatory credits, which is very interesting because this is essentially pure profit. There's no cost to it. Elon has kind of now hitched his ride to President Trump, right? And that he's supporting him. He's giving money to his campaign, but he's not a supporter of these EV credits. And that's what's interesting here is that the Democrats, they passed the Inflation Reduction Act, which helps the EV industry and gives consumers tax credits for buying these. And he's kind of sticking his nose up to this. Biden raised tariffs on Chinese electric cars, which helped Tesla, right? So it's very interesting to see this flip here. And he says that these regulatory credits are a small part of the equation for Tesla, but the numbers don't say that. In history, they've received nearly $2.5 billion in EV credits. Seems like a lot of money to me when there's no cost. That's pure revenue. Okay. And the Trump administration has been fighting California laws to reduce, ICE vehicles and go fully electric. And now history says that they typically back off from that themselves, but the Trump administration has been fighting that. Right. And we'll probably continue to do so if we get a second Trump administration. So it's a very interesting tie up. And I don't think it's going to be good for Tesla shareholders, despite Elon supporting the former president. So I just wanted to highlight that because it's very important to see, hey, Tesla's in a longer term downtrend. Their profits are so. And the only thing kind of saving them in this latest quarter are those regulatory credits. And when I look at estimates for next year, it's $2.27 in earnings this year, down 27% after 23% drop last year in earnings. So, yeah, things are not looking up for Tesla. Now, I'm Justin Klein. This is another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.